Hello everyone. You are listening to the Creative Biolabs podcast. We provide reliable exosome-related services and products to clients around the world. Our services cover all aspects of exosome isolation and purification, identification, antibody, and engineering.
Hello everybody, and thank you for listening to our program on time every Saturday night. I'm Connie, and today, we have our old friend Dr. Hofstadter to explore more interesting knowledge about exosomes. So, Dr. Hofstadter, welcome to our podcast, and thanks so much for joining us.
Good evening, Connie. Thank you for your invitation. I'm very glad to be here.
So maybe, Dr. Hofstadter, let me kick it off with a brief review. Exosomes and microvesicles are small spherical membrane fragments shed by several cell types during physiological processes. The role of exosomes in the progression and metastasis of malignant tumors has received increasing attention. In previous episodes, we mentioned the functional role of tumor exosomes in influencing pre-metastatic niche formation and metastatic behavior. We also discussed their interactions with cells in the tumor microenvironment, such as myeloid cells, endothelial cells, and mesenchymal cells, and attempted to elucidate the mechanisms of these interactions. Tumor-secreted exosomes, as new players, play an emerging role in altering the tumor microenvironment during tumor progression. Furthermore, we commented on the contribution of exosomes secreted by non-tumor cells to metastatic progression. Taking all these together, it was concluded that exosome research has the potential to uncover new targets and lead to new therapies for tumor and metastatic progression. As increasing attention has been put on microvesicle-mediated intercellular communication these years, it's recognized that microvesicles released by cells used to rescue damaged tissues in regenerative medicine seem to be important for improving the function of damaged organs. So, in the next few episodes, maybe we could link microvesicles and regenerative medicine and introduce an emerging and important role. What do you think, Dr. Hofstadter?
Absolutely. I think we need to first understand the two recognized sources of microvesicles. One is that microvesicles fall off the cell surface of normal healthy or damaged cells. This is in a calcium flex and calpain-dependent manner. Moreover, microvesicles hijack membrane components and phagocytize cytoplasmic contents. And, another source of microvesicles is in the intracellular membrane chamber. We call these microvesicles exosomes, which are usually released from cells in the form of secretory particles during exocytosis.
Are there any specific characteristics of these two different sources of microvesicles?
Yes. The shedding of membrane-derived microvesicles is a physiological phenomenon that accompanies cell activation and growth. So it's not surprising that fast-growing cell lines tend to secrete more microvesicles than slow-growing cell lines. Generally, the number of microvesicles shed from cells increases in some cases. This includes cellular activation, hypoxia or radiation, oxidative damage, exposure to proteins that activate the complement cascade, exposure to shear stress, etc. There is increasing evidence that microvesicles are shed in a calpain-dependent manner. This relies on the increase of cytosolic calcium ions and the degradation of the membrane cytoskeleton. I want to mention that, compared with microvesicles released from surface membranes during membrane blebbing, exosomes from endosomes were much smaller in size and appeared more homogeneous.
As far as I know, in numerous kinds of literature, microvesicles usually appear by different names. Do you think there is a difference between these terms?
Exactly. For example, during tissue development, microvesicles released from the basolateral membrane of morphogen-synthesizing cells are called argosomes. The microvesicles released by activated human polymorphonuclear leukocytes are sometimes referred to as exosomes. Other terms for microvesicles, as you may know, include microparticles or signal bodies. The latter reflects the biological role of microvesicles as a signaling complex.
Yeah, but undoubtedly, the biological significance of microvesicles has been largely ignored for many years. Moreover, like apoptotic bodies, microvesicles are seen as mere cellular debris. Now growing evidence shows that these tiny spherical membrane fragments coordinate several biological processes. What made scientists change their minds about them?
Well, in my view, we have recognized that microvesicles are secreted by healthy, immortal cells on the one hand. They are much smaller in size than apoptotic bodies, and do not contain nuclear fragments with nuclear DNA, a common feature of apoptotic bodies. Microvesicles, on the other hand, contain many structural proteins, such as receptors and adhesion molecules, as well as lipids. This is similar to the lipids in the cell membranes from which they originate.
If I get it right, that's to say, microvesicles contain many proteins and lipids similar to those in the cell membranes from which they originate.
Exactly. In addition, since microvesicle membranes engulf some cytoplasm during vesicles, they may also contain intracellular proteins, messenger RNAs, regulatory microRNAs, and even intact organelles such as mitochondria. In this transfer of messenger RNA or protein, microvesicles act as a natural engineered liposome. Notably, it has been demonstrated that messenger RNA and microRNA molecules are somehow preferentially enriched in microvesicles through a mechanism involving docking proteins.
So, how does the treatment of damaged organs in regenerative medicine relate to microvesicles?
There is growing evidence that several cell types are used in regenerative medicine to treat damaged organs, such as bone marrow-derived mononuclear cells, hematopoietic stem progenitor cells, mesenchymal stem cells, or multipotent stromal cells, skeletal muscle myoblasts, cardiac stem cells, and neural stem cells, are rich sources of cell surface membrane and endosomal membrane-derived microvesicles. New data shows that microvesicles can replace intact cells in regenerative medicine approaches.
In general, what are the exciting advances in regenerative medicine in microvesicles research?
Well, the field of regenerative medicine is looking for sources of stem and progenitor cells that can be safely and effectively used to regenerate damaged organs, such as the heart, liver, kidney, or neural tissue. Various types of stem cells isolated from adult tissues have been used in experimental animal models of organ injury, such as cardiac infarction, liver injury, ischemic renal failure, or stroke. These include bone marrow-derived mononuclear cells, hematopoietic stem cells, mesenchymal stem cells, and skeletal muscle myoblasts as described above. Similar types of cells are used clinically to treat patients, and clinical trials are underway or completed, using these cells to improve the function of damaged organs. Meanwhile, another promising source of stem cells for regenerative medicine has emerged. It is induced pluripotent stem cells, one of the rich sources of microvesicles.
So, what difficulties and challenges do you think this field could face?
Great question. You know, though some beneficial effects have been reported following cell-based therapy, there is no conclusive evidence that cells used to regenerate damaged tissue generate organ-specific cell populations. Overall, the notion that stem cells are plastic and can transdifferentiate into cells from different germ layers, proposed a few years ago, lacks reliable experimental support. Therefore, the concept of stem cell plasticity or transdifferentiation is challenged. And some of the positive effects of stem cell therapy have been explained by other mechanisms.
Okay. Maybe one more question. What are the alternative explanations for the phenomenon of stem cell transdifferentiation or plasticity?
In light of the current findings, I think alternative explanations for stem cell transdifferentiation or plasticity are possible by means of cell fusion, paracrine stimulation, heterologous stem cell populations in the bone marrow, and microvesicle-mediated molecular transfer.
I see. Maybe we could go further with these in our next episode. Dr. Hofstadter, this was a great conversation all around. I really appreciate the time and all of your insights.
Thank you for having me. This was truly enjoyable.
All right, thank you all for joining us. Please follow and listen to our podcast if you enjoyed the episode, and we'll speak to you soon. Thanks again.